Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast. We're a weekly podcast where we list and talk about our weekly topic. This week's topic being, what's the topic this week?
Romantic movies.
Yes, this will be released on Valentine's Day, so
I guess. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Yay. Valentine's Day. Yay. Yeah, so for the new listeners, I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
And I'm Kevin.
There you go. You got four hosts talking about romantic movies. This week's topic. Well, it's three guys and one girl. So it's going to get really romantic. Did anybody have a hard time with this list?
Yes.
Yes.
I hate this list.
Only because I'm a huge sap and I just love that you throw romance in movie and I'm there. It's just, I'm a hopeless romantic. So I have like a list of like 20, 25 movies. I cut it down to about 14. But trying to actually do the top five was a pain in the ass.
Oh, wow. Well, I had a hard time with it just because my romantic movies were not, I guess romantic, but to me, I guess that's the problem.
So
American Psycho.
Not traditionally romantic?
Yes, I guess so.
This list made me feel like I might be dead inside.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt a little bit. I'm like, is Heat? Heat's got a romantic movie.
No, Heat? It's
not. Yeah, there's a little
it's
bit.
It's the love between the cop and the criminal.
Yeah, yeah.
The but symbiotic anyway, relationship I where they need each other to exist.
Yeah, I didn't pick Heat, thank God. What else? Jenny, did you have a hard time with this?
I mean, I always have a hard time thinking of movies to start out with, so I always like research a bunch and look at a bunch of lists, but all the romantic movie lists are stupid, crappy movies. Like, number one was like Titanic on almost every single list, and no, I'm not going to put Titanic on my list. So I had to like research ridiculous amount.
Well, my problem is, but then coming through the whole romantic movie, it's like, all right, so romantic movie or romantic comedies or what?
Yeah. That's the thing. It's kind of, we left it kind of broad and that, so it should be interesting.
Yeah.
What else? Any new movies you guys seen in theaters? Anything new?
Yes.
What did you see, Kevin?
I saw The Woman in Black and I saw Miss Bala.
How are they both?
Woman in Black it's entertaining. It looks good. Everybody does a good job.
It's okay. I also saw it.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it scary?
For cheap thrills.
Okay.
It's got some good scares in it, I think.
Okay.
It's got a really awesome vibe, like the atmosphere.
It does.
Out on the moors in the fog, and like the whole premise is that it's this house that's cut off from the rest of this village, where when the tide comes in, the road is washed out. So you're isolated at this mansion on this little island, and that was pretty interesting.
That was cool. And then the fact that just everything around the actual road to the house, you pretty much could just sink and die in because it's marsh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how much would you guys... So for the new listeners, basically what we do is we don't really review on this podcast, but we'll tell you how much we would pay to see this movie. So how much would you guys pay to see this movie if you guys didn't have MoviePass? MoviePass, we love you guys.
Yes, MoviePass.
Well, I would pay regular. I was really looking forward to this movie.
Really?
So I would pay Arclight weekend prices.
Okay.
Nice.
$15.
Okay. $15, yeah.
I would pay matinee, but you should never go see a horror movie during the day.
Yeah. So you have to pay.
So find it at a second run theater that you can pay $6
and go see it at night.
Yes.
Yeah. I apologize for. I have the sniffles. Yeah. I'm going doing this a lot. anything else? So how was Miss Bala? Bala.
It was great. The lead actress is terrific. I mean, she's what makes the movie. Her and the director, because the way he chose certain shots. It's brilliant. He really has an eye for what he wants to express through
Damn
the film.
Damn it. Don't tell me that, because now I got to go. Now I got to oh, Brian, you were right.
I have to actually thank Brian, because he recommended it and his review was good. And so I said, okay, I've got MoviePass. I'm going to go check it out. And it was really good.
Well, I guess I'll have to take a look now.
Yeah.
Is this like, would you pay full price?
I would pay full price. I've considered seeing it again because there was some really cool stuff that I want to see again.
Was it as good as City of God? Because that's what everyone keeps saying.
I love City of God. That's like a movie I watch a couple times a year. So I can't really put it at that level yet because I've only seen it once. Where City of God, I've studied.
But City of God, like, I walked out of it and I wanted to see. I saw it again the next day. Did you want to see Miss Barlow again the next day?
Not quite. I definitely want to check it out, but when I walked out, I didn't go, yeah, I'm going to go see the next showing right after this. I didn't get that feeling.
Well, okay then. I'll check it out.
Did you see anything else, Adam?
I did. I saw all the wide releases that opened this weekend. So, The Woman in Black, I saw Chronicle, and I also saw Big Miracle.
Ooh. Wow.
So how was Chronicle?
Yeah.
Chronicle was kind of stupid.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't really like it.
Oh,
like,
no.
I like the first half of Chronicle, and then it gets really retarded, and I don't see why it needs to be in that whole pseudo found footage category.
Mm.
I think it would have worked fine as a regular movie. I think it's just kind of a gimmick that I found unnecessary, and then they start playing with it in a different way where it's like, well, now it's totally unnecessary because, like, oh, he can magically levitate the camera, so it's just floating behind him now, so you don't... Why did you need the gimmick in the first place if he's just going to float the camera behind him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun for the first half of the movie when they're, like, discovering their powers and whatnot, but then it just gets kind of lame.
Okay.
And so then it reminds me of, like, Akira.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah. It's like Akira and Carrie combined.
Oh, okay.
That's an interesting combination.
How much would you pay to see this movie?
Like a matinee at a second run theater. It's like $5.
Okay.
Okay.
And then Big Miracle.
Whoa.
Was exactly what it looks like it's going to be when you see the trailers, a movie about whales.
It was not a big miracle to watch.
It's not a big miracle, but I mean, it wasn't a big... Like, I got exactly what I thought I was going to get from a movie about people coming together to save whales.
Okay.
My girlfriend said it best. She said it's not as good as Free Willy.
Okay. I like
it. Oh, well, then I'm not going to see it.
Well, Michael Madsen isn't in it, so.
He's
Michael
not.
Michael Madsen was playing the dead.
I'd He's not in it. But you got Ted Danson in it.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
John Krasinski.
Yeah.
It's got
yeah.
a pretty interesting cast. Ted Danson, John Krasinski.
Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell. Drew Barrymore. Dermot Mulroney. Wow. And as soon as he came up on the screen, because we had seen The Grey, I was like, I hope this works out better for him. Than The Grey did. Spoiler alerts. But I mean, they're in a plane crash at the beginning of The Grey, so you know things don't work out well for the people in the plane crash. He survives the plane crash, maybe.
Yeah. We don't know. Jenny, was that it? You saw two movies? Three movies, right?
Three movies, yeah.
Okay. And did you see anything new?
I saw A Better Life with you.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Did we talk about this last week?
No, we talked about Maryland.
Yeah.
Okay, we saw A Better Life. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, you know, sad to the, you know, down-to-earth home, whatever. Not me, but, you know, like, truthful, I guess, whatever. But
I don't think so.
Oh, okay, maybe I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it was, some parts were really good, and
he was really good
in it. Demian Bichir is really good in it. He's really good in it. Like, he deserves a
nomination. Even the son was good in it, I thought.
Yeah, but some of the...
You didn't like the son?
he was all right. I had no problem with him. I had... Just the story itself was kind of... We've seen it.
Yeah, you knew what was going to happen, pretty much.
It's the Mexican bicycle thief, basically. Yeah.
It's not nearly as much subtitles as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like half and half,
probably. I think that's what it bugged me, that, like, I'm like, these guys wouldn't be really... Talking in English? Why are they talking in English? I don't know. Anyway, it was just okay. I guess I saw a screener of it. I guess if I had to pay for it, I'd say second run, $5. That's how much I'd pay to see it.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't go to the theater to see it. I'm not going to lie to you.
You'd nothing.
Yeah,
yeah,
probably.
That's it, I think. You saw something else. What else did you see?
Oh, today I watched The Tree of Life, finally.
Finally. So
a year later.
So what do you think?
Visually, it was very awesome and inspiring, and I'm like super into nebulas and stuff, and so every single one of those scenes made me want to go paint like really bad. But it was, I had too many questions and I can't, it was like one of those things where I was just asking like, wait, does he know? Are they still talking? Or wait, which brother is this? And Ricardo's going, stop asking so many questions. You don't need to know any of that. I'm like, I'm curious. I feel like that's important, but it's not apparently at all. So, I mean, it was, I thought it was all right. It was good. The storyline was interesting and visually it was really cool. And Jessica Chastain? Jessica Chastain. Yeah, she was really good in it. I liked her a lot. Even Brad Pitt was pretty good as a mean dad.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Made me
not want to have boys, by the way, at all.
They just break stuff. And
shoot each other and stick your finger here. Yeah. No.
Whoa.
It was on a BB gun, okay.
What else did I see? I saw something else. Oh, well, we rewatched. She hadn't seen Assassination of Jesse James.
Oh, yeah.
So,
it was a little Brad Pitt marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really good. I mean, I rewatched it. I'd seen it in theater.
And that's a very Malick-like movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Very poetic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Actually, it's funny. I had seen it like a year before that, before its release. I saw a screening of it. And actually, the screening I saw was a little longer.
Really?
Than the theatrical release, so it was closer to. I think this one is like runs over like a little bit shy of 3 hours, doesn't it?
I have no idea.
I think so.
No, I think it's just shy of 3 hours. I think.
Yeah, and the one I saw was shy of 4.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So a lot of extra stuff.
I didn't realize how many awesome people were in that movie.
Yeah,
it's got a great cast.
Fantastic. People who you're like, oh, Ted Levine is in this. I forgot. And both. Stevenson? No, that's not how you say it, right?
Bo Svenson?
Svenson. Yeah.
From
Glorious Bastards.
And Glorious Bastards and The Longest Yard?
Yes, yes. So.
Or not The Longest Yard, North Dallas 40.
Yes, yes, yes. Which we talked about last week. So, yeah, that's it for movies we watched. And should we get to the list? Does anybody have a streaming of the week? Anybody?
I have not been on Netflix at all this week, so I don't have anything.
Well, I just saw an old 80s movie that I remember watching as a kid, and I'll recommend that. That's really good. It's a movie called Vamp. And you know what I'm talking about, Kev?
I don't, but I just love these like random 80s films that you come out with.
Yeah. I just recently I saw that it popped up on Netflix, and it's a very 80s movie. It's about these two college kids that are trying to pledge a fraternity. And they're kind of like, they're just not feeling all, you know, they're not feeling it. They don't like the rituals, you know. And so they're like, you know what, let's just go out and let's go to the city and let's go party. And they invite this Asian kid who can't get into any fraternity and he's like the party animal. And they invite him and they you know, he kind of funds it. They use his car and they go to the city, which I think the city is L.A. I think they drive to L.A. from what I remember. And anyway, long story short, they end up at this club where it's nothing but vampires, but it's very 80s, so it's like it's kind of scary, but it's kind of funny, it's kind of hokey at points. And one of the main like villain vampires is the main villain vampire, the head vampire is the girl from the woman from Conan the Barbarian. Do you know what I'm talking about? The African American lady,
Grace Jones.
Grace Jones, yeah, really?
That's Conan the Destroyer.
I'm sorry, Conan the Destroyer, which is the first one, right?
No, Conan the Barbarian is the first one.
Yeah,
Conan and the Destroyer is the second one. No, okay. She's in the second one.
Well, she's in the Conan the Destroyer, and she's amazing. There's almost a full like nude scene with her. Yeah,
which isn't really something anyone which is nothing, needs
yeah,
to see.
Yeah, so that's more of a warning than anything. And then the main bad guy, who's the male. Villain is the guy from
the male female. You wanted female. To say
the male villain is the guy from The Untouchables, the creepy guy that
Billy Drago.
Yes, that's
really
it. Yes. So it's really funny. It's really 80s, and if you enjoy 80s movies, you'll definitely enjoy this. It's very cheesy. So, wow, I spent like 4 minutes describing it. So yeah, check it out if you like 80s cheesy like horror. Check it out. It's called Vamp. On Netflix now. Should we get to the list? What's going on, guys?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it. Who wants to go first?
You. You go first.
I go first? Okay.
Yeah, all right. Go first.
All right, I'll go first. My number five. Again, this is a very, like, It was very broad. I don't know if I did a good job on this list.
He's very self-conscious. Yeah.
Wow, you're usually not like this when it comes to the list.
Yeah. So anyway, number five. I think this says a lot about you. Like, what type of a romantic person are you? You know what I mean, are you kind of a downer? Are you like
I hope not
cheerful? I hope not.
Because then people just stop listening to me right now. Fast forward past my parts.
So number five is As Good as It Gets, from 1997. I think to me that's kind of like having to get over. So for the people who haven't seen this movie. It stars Jack Nicholson, Helen Hunt, Greg Kinnear, Cuba Gooding Jr., and the summary is a single mother waitress, a misanthropic author, and a gay artist form an unlikely friendship. But what I kind of got out of it, you know, what I love about this movie that is a romance is Jack Nicholson is this kind of like obsessive-compulsive like author. He's kind of cranky, he hates everything, and Helen Hunt is his waitress, and he always goes to her restaurant every day. He brings his own plastic utensils and she waits on him, and he's kind of a jerk. He's an asshole, you know, and throughout the movie he learns about her and she kind of learns about him, and they embark on a sort of road trip. They forcibly go on this road trip. And I think that's romantic to me, that the fact that he had to get over his crap. You know what I mean?
He wants to be better for
her. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
The line is the most famous line, and I guess, you know, you can't, he just burned that line for everybody. And the famous line is, "You make me want to be a better man." So, and I think that's the line that kind of gets me, that kind of like, oh, that's romantic to me.
That is.
Somebody would change, you know, that a woman would want to make you be a better man. That's why I picked it. And I love Jack Nicholson. I think besides The Departed, this is one of his, you know, his latter years. This is one of his better performances.
Better than The Bucket List.
Yes.
Yes, definitely better. And it's James L. Brooks.
James L. Brooks, yeah.
So if you're a fan of James L. Brooks, watch this. Greg Kinnear is awesome. Skeet Ulrich is in this as well. We haven't seen him.
Johnny Depp light.
Yeah. The Johnny Depp doppelganger. Yeah. That sums it up. You make me want to be a better man. The line. And that's my number five.
Yeah. It's a good one.
That is a good one.
All right. Me? Okay. My number five, I went with a romantic comedy, and I picked Forgetting Sarah Marshall for my number five.
Oh, wow.
It's one of my favorite comedies also, and one of my favorite romantic parts. I don't know. I love everything about it. It's got a great cast. It's got a great production company attached to it. It's got, it's hilarious. It's just the right amount of raunchy plus romantic plus whatever else. I don't really remember
any of the romance from this movie.
Really?
I like the movie. I just don't remember. That's the problem with this list, where it's like some movies are like, oh, that's a romantic movie, but I don't think about it as a romantic movie.
But there's those scenes where that are romantic, in a way romantic, where she's pushing him to like step out of his boundaries, like jump off the cliff, do things, and he's doing that for her.
Yeah, it's like the beginning parts of a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, where
again, I think I'm just dead inside, so.
That could be it. Yeah. No,
I'm sorry.
What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
I even like the parts where they show Kristen Bell and Jason Segel when they're still together. Like, even those are funny. I don't know. Devastated Peter takes a Hawaii vacation in order to deal... Wouldn't it be a Hawaiian vacation?
Yeah.
In order to deal with the recent breakup with his TV star girlfriend, Sarah. Little does he know, Sarah's traveling to the same resort as her ex, and she's bringing along her new boyfriend, who is...
Russell Brand,
yes. And that was the first time I'd ever seen him, and he is hilarious in this. I think he's so funny.
Yeah.
He's not funny in, you know, when he did the... He hosted something and it wasn't very funny. But in movies, people make jokes for him very well.
He reads other people's jokes very well.
Yes, and it works out very well for him, in his behalf. But I love this movie. I think it's really funny. And Yeah, I'm one of those that's just, I mean, it's more real life than, to me, this is more real life than other romantic movies like Titanic, which, what? No, that would never happen. That's silly.
No, it's based on a true story, though.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's based on a true story, yeah. So, I don't know. I like it. I like everything about it.
Yeah, there's some really cool moments with, you know, the beginning, the breakup. Apparently, a lot of stuff is, like, from his real life. I guess he had a breakup one time where he was naked.
Yeah.
One of the things in the commentary. And then I think the movie itself is based on an event that he had where he, since he's an actor, he, you know, he's traveling a lot for movies and stuff. And he apparently did break up with a girl, which I may or not be Linda Cardellini. And,
because they dated after Freaks and Geeks or something.
Yeah, and apparently he went on vacation and she happened to be staying at the same hotel that he was. So,
damn.
Based on true events, I guess.
Yeah, I love Paul Rudd in this too. Paul Rudd's so funny.
Are you from London?
Are you from London? You sound like you're from London.
So that is your number five.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, number five. So my number five. I'm thinking about it still because I hate this list and I just have all these movies sitting here that I can't think of about which order I want to put them in. So let's just pick a random one. My number five is going to be The Apartment.
That's a good one. That's an honorable mention for me.
Yeah, mine too. I had already used it for favorite movies of all time, so I didn't want to double up.
Well, it's a great movie. Unfortunately, it was remade as Loser in like 1999 or something. You guys remember that?
Yep.
Heckerling. Yeah. So if you've seen The Loser, you've seen The Apartment, but The Apartment is better.
Yeah,
by far.
A lot better.
So it's a man tries to rise in his company by letting its executives use his apartment for trysts, but complications and a romance of his own ensue. And it's starring Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine as these two co-workers at this insurance company. And he's kind of got a thing for her, but she's got this backstory with her, with Jack Lemmon's boss. And you've got all these other junior executives who are all using Jack Lemmon's apartment to hook up with secretaries and whatnot. Yeah. And it's just a fun movie. It's Billy Wilder directing. Fred McMurray's in it, Ray Walston. But I mean, what sells this movie for me is Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine.
Mm-hmm.
They make this movie, they just imbue it with so much life. And they don't even kiss in the entire movie.
Yep.
They don't kiss.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
That
I hadn't put 200 together.
Yeah. This is just a good movie all around, period. I mean, and top of the fact that it's a great romance. Jack Lemmon really makes this movie for me.
And yeah, he's so good.
I saw this, you know, really young, and I fucking love this movie.
It's on my list to see on the big screen.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
But it's, again, that whole wanting to become the better person for each, like, help each other figure out the versions of themselves they want to be. And it's not so much, I hate it when it's like someone changing the person.
Yeah.
When they're not actively trying to change them, it's just they inadvertently help each other become the best versions of themselves. And I like that.
Yeah, that's good. A good part of it. I haven't seen this movie in a really long time, and I need to see it really bad. I've been waiting for it to go on Netflix, and it hasn't. But I did see Promises, Promises on Broadway, and it's the same story.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's really good.
The musical version. Right?
Yeah, it was a musical, but it had Sean Hayes and Kristen Chenoweth in it. But it was really good, and pretty close to the movie from what I remember and from what I heard everyone else say. But yeah, I need to see it again really bad.
You do.
Yeah.
it's really good. It's Billy Wilder, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So check that out. It's a good movie.
Okay, so my number five is from 1945, and it's Brief Encounter.
Damn you.
Yep.
That one is on my list, too. I don't know what number it is.
Well, I mean, you could just make it number four, and we could just talk about it.
Okay, it's my number four.
It's directed by David Lean, and it's based off a one-act play by Neil Coward.
Noel Coward.
Noel Coward. it stars Celia Johnson and Trevor Howard, who are both terrific. The plot of the film is, meeting a stranger in a railway station, a woman is tempted to cheat on her husband. The reason I love this movie, because it is just like the beginning, just almost like if you took a romantic film where the two people are single and it's just their start of the relationship, them getting to know each other and the reasons why they start falling for each other. But it's two married people who, the way they believe it is, they found a companion, they had kids, and they were happy. And now when they actually start experiencing love for the first time, Celia Johnson, first of all, thinks that they're being children and being childish, because why would a regular person fall in love? Why would you do this before? I mean, she's happy with her husband, but she technically was never really in love with her husband. She wanted to not hurt him, and she loves her husband, but in a way she had never really fallen in love with her husband. So now that she's got these weird feelings for this new guy who's also married, she just thinks that they're kind of being like foolish and not grown up, and this shouldn't be real, because no one ever does, this never happens to anybody. And I just like that idea that they're experiencing something new, and she loves it because she loves the feelings and she loves being with them. And they only see each other once a week, and that whole week she's just sitting there waiting for that meeting. But I just love the fact that they've both finally got to see what love felt like, but they really in the end can't have that.
I think you summed it up pretty awesomely. It's just such a, it's that whole, yeah, that suburban sort of microcosm,
yeah,
of a relationship that you see in like Revolutionary Road or in like a John Updike story, like Marry Me. And it's just about how people get stuck going for what they think, like being the dutiful partner, and get stuck in this relationship that they feel like they're obligated to be in, giving up on like true love, and they find it in this train station and just happenstance.
Yeah.
I love the bit with the eyelash, and oh, it's so good. I might have said that I feel dead inside, but even the trailer for Brief Encounter makes me tear up a little bit when she's breaking down, talking about like how they fell in love. And I don't remember the exact line that she says, but this trailer makes me tear up. And then that last scene at the train station.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
When she runs to the boardwalk, or not the boardwalk, what's it called? Just
the platform
where the trains are, it's heart-wrenching the first time when you just, oh, what's going to happen?
Well, especially that angle, and what she is actually planning on doing when she runs out there, and just that Dutch angle, yeah, that David Lean uses, and how he just puts you right in her head right there. And then she runs out, and you go, oh, man.
And the music.
Yeah.
They use all that Rachmaninoff.
Yeah.
Very effectively. And just every... I feel like it's two... He creates two different worlds very well between the suburban life and when they're together in the country. It's a great movie. I mean, I know I just threw it on as number four because I didn't know what my lists are, but technically it probably should be number one.
It's been such a long time since I've seen this movie, but I remember it being, I was like, whoa, this is...
I like his big epics, but I think, yeah, Brief Encounter is my favorite David Lean movie. Yeah.
It's more, definitely more, you know, it's not Lawrence of Arabia.
No.
But it shows you, because in those epic films, he can still make them very personal, and this is, yeah, this film, yeah, is an example, right, of very,
yeah, this
personal.
Is like all of take the war out of Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah.
And you've got,
yeah,
Brief Encounter. But I like the love story in Brief Encounter a little bit more.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Comparing to Dr. Zhivago, I would need to watch Lawrence of Arabia again and rewatch. But
there's no love story in Lawrence of Arabia.
I'm just saying, comparing him to his other films.
Him as Lawrence and Omar Sharif.
Yeah,
they fell in love out in the dunes. It was the first Brokeback Mountain.
That was the uncut, yeah, version. But just comparing David Lean films, I would have to rewatch them. But this movie is pretty amazing, and it is definitely one of my favorite of his.
What year was this? Does anybody know?
1945.
Oh, okay. I have to definitely watch that again.
Yeah, and you see, yeah, that?
It's really good.
Yeah. Awesome. Both your number fours.
No, that was my number five.
Is number four.
And actually, I'm going to say that's my number one.
Okay.
It's not my number four. It's my number one.
Okay.
Nice.
I picked for my number four, 1993's True Romance.
I knew, as soon as you started talking about this list, I was like, he's probably not going to put the one movie they talked about as favorite films, he's going to put True Romance on his list.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Annie Hall is up there for me, but I didn't put it on this list because I already used it. So,
well, again, it comes down to the whole True Romance. Definitely, I'm like, it's in the title. It popped up in my head, yeah. But I was like, I'm going to save that for something else, something more obscure later on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with Annie Hall, it's like if we do romantic comedies,
yeah,
probably going to pop up there.
Yeah,
but because I'm trying to weed out, like, these are the movies that are probably not going to appear on any other list, yeah, that I can think of off, yeah, the top of my head.
Yeah.
They only fit for this category for me right now.
Yeah. This, I guess True Romance fits in a ton of lists, but I picked it for this.
Works. Yeah. I'm not arguing this.
The Love Story is
definitely an honorable mention.
Yeah. It's from 1993. The synopsis is Clarence marries hooker Alabama, steals cocaine from her pimp, and tries to sell it in Hollywood, while the owners of the coke try to reclaim it. Very simple.
Yeah.
So basically, Clarence works at a comic book store. His boss hires a hooker for him on his birthday to meet him at his favorite theater.
Which is the Vista.
Yes.
Which I love. When I moved into that neighborhood, I'm like, holy shit, that's where Clarence and Alabama meet. I live right down the street from where Clarence and Alabama met.
But they don't, it's, I think it's supposed to take place like in...
Yeah, it's in Detroit.
Detroit, yeah. Yeah,
but, which is so weird.
Yeah. So he... finds out she confesses she's a hooker. He tells her that he kind of loves her, and they get married, and she's like, well, I have a pimp and he won't let me go, my stuff's still there. The pimp is Gary Oldman,
and he's awesome. He's an amazing, so good.
What accent is he doing? He's doing it this crazy, like, kind of Jamaican
kind of,
right?
Yeah, it's kind
Jamaican
of
a, white boy yeah, posing
exactly
as a black guy.
Yeah.
Drexel.
Yeah. Yeah, Drexel's an amazing character. And basically, I like how he tells him if he's hungry. That's my favorite line. He's like, if you would have just started eating, I would believe that you're crazy. This guy's so calm. He's eating.
That's Charlie Bronson.
Yeah, it's Charlie Bronson. It's directed by Tony Scott and written by Quentin Tarantino. And you could definitely
how many lists have you had a Tony Scott movie on? I feel like you've always got a Tony Scott movie.
I feel like that. I was actually doing this list, and I'm like, you know what? I'm a fan of Tony Scott. I could have put.
You gotta throw him in for good measure.
I could have put, yeah, Top Gun in here, and it was still.
That came up on some list that I, yeah, I googled. I was, yeah, like, Top Gun, best romance. All the
Iceman.
Dudes. Bromance. Yeah, yeah, the bromance.
Come on, dude.
It's, come on.
Very romantic. And take my breath away.
You can, know, be my wingman anytime.
Yeah. So, yeah, Tony Scott is in every one of my lists. Weird. But anyway, you could definitely tell, like, this was Tarantino's fantasy, you know? Like, the guy works at a comic book store. The, you know, lovable hooker. You got a great supporting cast. You have Brad Pitt playing a stoner.
Which I heard was the motivation for Pineapple Express. Like, what if we just followed the stoner character?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In him getting involved in
like, yeah,
like a drug heist. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And so he's in the small part of the movie, and he steals his scenes. The scenes he's in, a scene with James Gandolfini, and he just steals the scene. Michael Rappaport is his roommate. This movie has a huge cast. Tom Sizemore. I think Chris Penn is in it too at the end. I think he's one of the cops.
Yes, they're partners.
Yeah. So, yeah, go check it out. It's fun. I think it's romantic.
They are clearly in love.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, their relationship.
He kills a pimp. For her,
yeah.
And it's all that, like, they do some crazy shit for each other. They're,
yeah,
it's crazy love.
It's kind of, I guess, it's funny because I heard Tarantino was inspired by Badlands, which would have been in this list if I hadn't used this movie before. Badlands, the Terrence Malick movie.
Makes total sense, yes, considering that they mm-hmm. use, like, the same music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a very, very.
The same narration.
Yes. Very much like Badlands. Where it's like, hey, once these people fall in love, there's nothing they won't do for each other.
Wait, so was Badlands also the inspiration for Natural Born Killers?
I think so, too.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, yeah. And he wrote them, like, very close to each other, I think. So
I love Val Kilmer as Elvis.
Yeah, he's never in focus, but you can tell it's him.
He sees Elvis, yeah, in his head. Christopher Walken. And that scene between Christopher Walken
and Dennis Hopper. Yeah. Oh, such a good
Not
scene.
Romantic at all,
no,
but it's a great scene.
An amazing scene. It's kind of like, talk about like an acting school. You know what I mean? You watch that and just these two people just talking, and they make talking so dynamic. I mean, it helps that that's one thing that I do give Tarantino is that, hey, he knows how to write just two people talking. And especially these two actors are amazing at it. And it's literally like a 10-minute scene. No, I'm exaggerating. Like a 5-minute scene of two people just sitting down and talking. And it's tense. It's amazing. It's a good scene. And it's kind of, again, huge cast. Walken, I totally forgot. Dennis Hopper. Bunch of people that you would recognize if you watched it. So check it out. Tony Scott, Tarantino, my number 4, True Romance. Check it out.
Okay, my number 4. I picked 500 Days of Summer as my number 4.
I knew somebody was going to pick
honorable it. Mention.
Yeah, honorable mention.
Nice. It's very sad ending, but and not very romantic ending, but more real life than anything, which is what I like these days. And yeah I love it. It's got a great soundtrack. It's got a great cast. Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel. And their chemistry together is just fantastic. And watching them go through, again, that beginning relationship part where they don't know where either of them stands and one person wants more than the other one. And, you know, it's pretty great. The plot is an offbeat romantic comedy about a woman who doesn't believe true love exists and the young man who falls for her. So it's just Joseph Gordon-Levitt having to go through like all this crap because Zooey Deschanel doesn't believe in love.
Yeah. Well, yep. Doesn't believe in love with him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, she doesn't believe in love at all at the beginning.
Yeah. Throughout their relationship, yeah. she doesn't believe in love
at all until the end when she finds somebody else. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I I read a quote from Willing Goldman in one of his, I think it was one of his books or one of the interviews he did, but Willing Goldman, the writer of The Princess Bride, author, you know, screenwriter, and he said you could always show people falling in love in a movie and falling out of love, but never the in between, ever. And this movie kind of like is a proof of it. Like it's basically you see the beginning of the relationship and the end, but not the in between because that would be boring, I think. But yeah, I love this movie. It's really well done, and it's kind of like I like that they didn't cop out with a crappy ending where they're like, oh, we're happy with each other and we're in love. Yeah. And I like that. And Minka Kelly's comes out, little cameo at the end.
That was not. That they could have cut that part out. Oh, her name is Autumn. Oh my gosh.
That did bug me. Her name bugged me, but I did like that extra scene that, you know, you never know. I mean, again, if he hadn't been brokenhearted and he wouldn't have pushed himself to get back to what he loved, his love of architecture, he would have never met this girl. It's kind of, to me, also, that's a love story for me. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you got to go through hell to get to heaven, I guess. Wow, that got a little.
Wow. Well,
kind of a little deep there, guys.
Okay, sorry. Confucius.
Yeah. But basically, yeah, like he had to go through, he had to get experience heartbreak to find love, you know?
Yeah.
I love the scenes that are very cinematic and can technically not be considered realistic, but like the scene after they have sex and they have there's a dance number.
Yeah.
But that what I loved is the director is capturing the exact way you would feel after you've been pining for this girl and it happens, and that's exactly how you would feel the day after you'd want to break out in a dance.
Yeah. And you can't show that in his head. You can't show what it feels like in his body, you know, in his heart, but you can show it in a musical
version. Give me a new love for Hall & Oates.
That scene, and then the scene where Chloe Moritz comes over and he's just breaking dishes.
My two favorite scenes. I love her in that, Chloe. She's so funny in that, too. I always forget she's in it until I watch it again. But yeah, she's funny. I really like the whole scene where they do the two different, the actual, and then what he like really wanted to happen, and they do this split screen, I guess. I don't know.
That's really well done.
Yeah, it was really well done, and I love that part too. That whole scene, because he goes to a party where he's meeting her, and he has these high expectations about how it's going to turn out, and she's going to be like, "Oh yay, I'm so glad you're here, and I want to, you know, spend the whole time with you that you're here," but it ends up that she's like just invited to him to a party where all her friends are at, and she wants to talk to everybody because she's like a host or something, you know. So very real life, but I love it.
And that Joseph Gordon-Levitt scene where he's breaking like the dishes, I think it's very true to life. I think when girls get hurt, they, you know, they'll cry, they'll express their emotion, but when guys are hurt. They just break shit.
That's true.
So,
yeah.
And yeah, this was actually a blacklisted script from a couple of years ago, before it got made. And I think I got, this is one of the scripts I got a chance to read. And I'm like, how could they make this movie? And I think that's why I'm really excited about the new Spider-Man, is because he is a really good director. He's a music video director, but he deciphered it. He cracked this movie. And I mean, the fact that he used split screen and, you know, the musical montage, and it just really well done. And I think I have really high expectations for Spider-Man, and I think it's going to be well done.
Yeah.
Also, it really makes me like really appreciate the LA skyline.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You forget that. I think, quick little side note, I heard a commentary with Michael Mann, and he talked about that, how like when you live in a city, you forget what is beautiful about that city. And it made me rediscover things like that. Like, oh, that park. Like everyone, it's funny, there's a plaque now at the park, at the bench. They put a plaque. This is the 500 Days of Summer bench.
Yeah.
It's really funny. And but yeah, it made me rediscover like downtown LA, you know, and how beautiful it can be and stuff. You know, if you just avoid the homeless community. But yeah, so it's really...
No, I think you should hang out on Skid Row all the time.
All the time,
because
yeah.
You see some fucked up shit that you're not going to see anywhere else. And it's for free.
That's true.
And it doesn't cost a dime. All right.
Yeah.
So number four. Okay, yeah. So I actually have a number four now. My number four is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Damn you, nice. That's my number one.
Nice. There we go. We switched.
Yeah.
We're even. So many things to say about this movie. Okay, but first I guess I'll start with a synopsis. Jim Carrey plays a guy who finds out that his ex-girlfriend has had him deleted from her memory and decides to get back at her by having the same procedure performed. But as they're going through the procedure and he's stuck in his head with watching these memories being erased, he realizes that he wants to hold on to them, that they're precious, and that in spite of the fact that they ended poorly, that the relationship ended, he still cherished the moments that they had together. And that's why this movie is on this list, because it's just this amazing, amazing thing about how in spite of any bad times or struggle that you have with someone, there's still the good times that you can appreciate that.
Exactly.
And then what makes it even better is that, spoiler alert, at the end of the movie, when they realize that they've dated already, after they've met again, they say, fuck it, let's just try it again. I don't care. I don't care if you hurt me before and I erased you from my memory. I don't remember now, and so I'm willing to possibly be hurt again.
What? And like she goes, you know, I'm probably going to get bored with you, and I'm just going to be depressed. And he's like, you know what, right now I can't find anything I don't like about you, so what the hell, let's do it. And it's just saying that, yeah, there's going to be bad times, but there's going to be some pretty awesome times as well, and you might as well cherish those.
Right.
Yeah. This was definitely in my honorable mention.
Yeah,
and
me too.
It's just such a... well done. It's a really like high concept and stuff, because it's like getting your memory erased. And
we got Charlie Kaufman writing a movie about
a romance,
about memory and love, and
yeah. And but it's and also the way he filmed it, you know, handheld stuff. It's very intimate. Like it definitely like I'd say it's one of my favorite Jim Carrey performances. It's kind of like
it's my favorite.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's very like very subdued, very quiet.
Yeah. It's a very complex performance.
Yeah,
I think too also is because when Jim Carrey tries to be like do dramas, he's still trying to be big. You know what I mean? Like his performances are still big, where this one he definitely had a good director and he kind of was like, no, go less. And the less he did, meaning, you know, the more internal it was, the more I think like it was more impactful for me as a viewer.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's playing such a, as the movie goes on, you're starting, because throughout the film, you realize that Joel doesn't open up to Clementine, and that's one of the reasons, one of the issues she's having. And you just realize there's so much going on that happened in Joel's life, and he does such a great job of conveying that in his performance, that Joel is such a complex character and has had so many interesting things happen in his life that's where he is right now, and he just plays that performance so well.
And then again, also with a great supporting cast, Mark Ruffalo, Elijah Wood,
Tom Wilkinson,
Kristen Dunst,
Tom Wilkinson, David Cross, and Jane Cross. Adams.
Yeah.
It's fun. I don't think it's often where you laugh the hardest that you possibly can and then tear up like 5 minutes later. Like, yeah, it just takes you from one end of the spectrum to the other. It runs the gamut on emotions. It's an emotionally trying movie. At least it was the first time I saw it. Like, I still love to watch it.
Yeah.
It's a great flick.
But I think also a lot of the stuff that it did in camera, all the effects work he did in camera,
yes,
is really amazing.
Yes, well, Michel Gondry with his
a genius.
Trick doors and
yes,
mirrors
and the lighting and the, yeah, you know, and just really well done. I mean, this guy, talk about, I see a lot of, you know, if you go to film festivals and stuff like that, you see a lot of movies and a lot of guys that are really flashy and stuff, but, you know, these guys spent hours and hours doing special effects on After Effects or whatever, mm-hmm, you know, you're using. But then you see this guy that zero. It's all in camera. Mm-hmm. It's all
practical.
In real time, all practical. And you realize, like, wow, this truly is kind of a master of his craft, you know. And he's a music video director, so check out his music videos if you get a chance. Michel Gondry, French guy. It's a guy, not a girl. And do you guys feel, is it just me or is it like, has his other films like not hit? Like, they're not as, I think it's Charlie
Nothing
Kaufman.
He's done is as good as what he's done with, right? Charlie Kaufman.
I think, yeah, if he has a writer, Charlie Kaufman, and he's directing it, it's going to be great because he's going to have, the problem is those other films, he was the writer. And as much as I love Michel Gondry, he's not the greatest writer. He's a fantastic director. He knows what he's, yeah, doing there. And he can come up with a story, but he needs someone to write it and map it out and to have all the scenes and the dialogue and create the characters. And then he'll have something fantastic. So I think if he just crumbs up with a story and says, hey, who's an awesome, oh, you're awesome, can you write this for me? I'm going to direct it. And
even then, though, I have a problem with that. I think he just needs to do stuff with Charlie Kaufman because who did Seth Rogen wrote Green Lantern.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And that was shitty. I'm sorry if, yeah, I didn't like that movie.
It was bad.
It was pretty bad.
Green Lantern?
Yeah. 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 Or not Green Lantern. Green Hornet.
Green Hornet.
Okay. Yeah. Like, sorry.
Yeah. They were both bad.
It's, yeah, okay. Rogen and what, his partner?
I don't know
his
partner's name.
Evan Goldberg.
Yeah. So they wrote that and that's Michel, right, Gondry directed, and that wasn't good. And Gondry didn't write Be Kind Rewind, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yes. Science of Sleep and Be Kind Rewind. He was the writer.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
The Science of Sleep.
I think he had another writer on Be Kind Rewind, but he was like credited as writing Be Kind Rewind.
Yeah.
How was that movie? I never saw that one.
It's not very good.
But it has some really cool visual stuff in there.
Yeah, it's got great visual stuff, and it's got some funny moments. But it's, I mean, it's nowhere near Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. They're just very different.
Yeah.
Different movies.
And on the same vein, I think that when Charlie Kaufman directs his own stuff, he can get a little crazy. He can get a little wild, and I think his scripts do best when they're in the hands of a really good director. I think Schenectady, New York.
Schenectady. That's not how you spell it. Connect. Schenectady.
Whatever. Schenectady.
However you say that word, that's not Schenectady, because people kept correcting me about that too. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. Whatever that word is. The Charlie Kaufman movie.
Repeat it.
Someone said Schenectady. But it's not, because that's, it's not Schenectady. Schenectady's like SK something.
Yeah. Well, whatever it's spelled. We know what movie we're talking about.
Right.
Look it up. It's the Charlie Kaufman movie.
It's a trippy movie.
I enjoyed it. But
it's really long and really depressing.
I think in somebody else's hands, another director, maybe Michel Gondry, it would have been a much better movie and a much tighter movie. And that's my 5 cents. My 10 cents.
10 cents now?
Yeah.
Already then.
Screw your 5 cents. 10.
Okay, so my number four. This was difficult because until pretty much when I rewatched my number three movie, this was my number three. And they're both awesome movies. But my number four is from 1998, and it's Lovers of the Arctic Circle. I first have to thank Brian Peril for introducing me to this movie. He
Don't
recommended
thank
it.
Don't thank him.
I have to. this movie just blew me away. It's terrific. The plot basically is, Otto and Anna are kids. When they meet each other, their names are palindromes. They meet by chance, and they pretty much fall in love. I love the fact that it's 8-year-olds kind of behaving at an adult level, because the whole reason they end up kind of meeting, and what eventually ends up happening, is his father and her mother end up meeting and falling in love. And the whole reason they end up meeting is because of a note, a very romantic note that we actually never hear, that Otto writes on a plane, and he makes a bunch of these planes because Anna and Otto are in completely different schools on opposite sides of the street. So he makes a bunch of airplanes and writes this romantic note to her on like 50 airplanes and throws them because he needs to get one over into the school, the girls' school, so she'll read it and she'll fall in love with him. So there's all these planes all over the place, and her mom reads the note and goes, oh, this is so sweet. And everybody's talking about how, like, the kids are talking about how corny it is, and all the adults are like holding each other and kissing each other after they read this note. And Anna says, oh, that man wrote, he's the one who wrote it, and it's Otto's father. And because of that, she asks his name and they meet, and they ended up falling in love. And then because of it, Otto and Anna like end up spending all this time together. But it's just, it's very sweet. It's very romantic. Otto, deep down, is this dreamer, and he's just a romantic at heart, because, and he gets very emotional, and he ends up taking, something bad happens in his life, and this is what ends up ruining the relationship with Anna at a certain point, because he ends up taking all the blame because he feels he abandoned someone. And so he just leaves and disappears because he can't deal with the pain of what happened. But Otto and Anna still deep down, just, they know they're meant for each other, and it has this great, the ending is, it's very sad, but Otto is trying to set up this brilliant, like, romantic moment, because throughout the story, you find out that the way people met and the way he got his name is because this German soldier, during the war, jumped out and his parachute got caught in a tree, and Otto's grandfather ended up cutting him down, and the German soldier's name was Otto, and that's why he's named Otto. And after that, the German soldier ended up marrying this woman who ends up becoming a part of Anna's life at a certain part. It's very, it's just interesting how these, like, these two people end up forming the relationships for these two kids that end up growing up and falling in love with each other. But it's, I love the movie. It's terrific. And even though the ending is sad, it has so much romance, and it has romance coming from children that are at times more mature than the parents and just have like this big heart for love. And yeah, I love Lovers of the Arctic Circle.
Nice. I had never heard of this movie, so
yeah,
it will be on my
I've heard Brian talk about it before, but I've never actually seen it.
Yeah. I usually tune out.
Is it foreign?
Yeah, it's Spanish.
Okay. Very nice.
Spanish from Spain or Mexico?
Oh, from Spain. Well, because they're living in Spain. Okay. In it, so I would say it's Spain.
Yeah. That was your number...
Four.
Four. Yeah, my number three, correct? We're on number three.
That is correct.
Is 2004's Before Sunset.
Mm-hmm. Honorable mention.
Yeah. Is any on anybody else's list?
Honorable mention.
Okay. So basically, this is actually a sequel. This could have worked for sequels, but I wanted to wait to use it now. It's 9 years... 9 years after Jesse and Celine,
yeah,
first met. Now they encounter one another on the French leg of Jesse's book tour. So basically, this is a sequel to a movie called Before Sunrise, which literally is they filmed it like it's longer than 10 years in the in real life, right? It's longer, isn't it?
No, I think it had been 10 years in between. It had been 10 years in between the two movies.
Okay, so. This movie was released in 2004, so the first one, Before Sunrise, was released in 1994. And basically, in the first one, it's this young, like, college kid traveling to Europe, and he meets Julie Deppley, which is Celine. And he kind of, like, falls for her, and he tells her, hey, because she's on the train, she's going somewhere else. And he tells her, hey, just spend the day with me. And just take a risk, come down, get off the train here in Paris, and basically the whole movie is them just walking and talking. The whole movie's walking and talking. And
isn't that another movie?
Yeah. And so they kind of fall in love, but they're like, let's not give each other phone numbers. Let's just plan on meeting here a year later. They say a year from now exactly we'll meet again. And then we'll see where it goes. And they're kind of in love. They don't sleep with each other, right?
They do.
Yeah. They do. That's right. They do sleep with each other. And they say, hey, let's not give each other numbers. No contact information. We'll meet in a year. And that's a romantic movie unto itself. But this was even deeper for me. It spoke more to me. This is 10 years later, and Jesse has become like a successful like author. He's on the Paris stop of his book tour, and Celine shows up to the bookstore, which is, what is the bookstore again?
Shakespeare and Company?
Shakespeare and Company, yeah. And they meet up, and it's 10 years later. And again, this whole movie is them walking and talking. Jenny, have you seen this movie?
No.
Oh, man.
I haven't seen either one, first or second.
Okay. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Definitely do a double feature.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's just Jesse and Celine walking through the streets of Paris after you know, and he's got, both movies take place in one day. And this one, he's got, his flight is like that later that night. And like literally he's got like 5 hours to kill. So he walks around Paris and they kind of, you see like the relationship they could have had. And, you know, I won't give anything away, but it's really well made. It's you see them falling in love again, I think, to my, you know. And the ending is kind of open-ended, but I think it kind of describes what you are. I think what you think the ending is what kind of person you are, I think. I think if you think Jesse stayed and missed his flight, then you're a romantic. If you think that he called the taxi driver and went to the airport and made it there on time, you're kind of a pessimist.
or maybe a realist.
A realist, yeah.
You also have to let them know that Jesse is married with a child.
I think a pessimist would say that he has an allergic reaction to her cat and dies.
Isn't he divorced? I think he's separated.
Maybe he's separated.
Yeah, he's separated. But I think he goes home.
So it's the same girl in both movies?
Yeah, yep. same couple, yeah.
It's and the they same just couple. Run into each other randomly both times?
Well, she hears about the book signing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she lives in Paris. She's from Paris.
Okay.
But yeah, it's Julie Depley and Ethan Hawke. And I've always loved Ethan Hawke ever since, you know, Dead Poets Society. But this kind of, the first movie, Before Sunrise, kind of was like, wow, this guy is amazing. Like, the thing about these two movies is that literally it's 2 hours, a little shy of 2 hours, of people just talking. There's nothing being done. There's no tasks to be done other than, well, you know, later on I got to go home, you know, mm-hmm. at the end of the movie. I have to go home, I guess. But literally 2 hours of people just talking, just like literally. And these conversations are really deep and you know, involving. And it's really well done. It's Richard Linklater written, directed by. The sequel is actually written by all three of them.
Yeah, because they all worked on the dialogue and the conversations together, and they really wanted it to seem natural.
Yeah. And apparently they're working on a sequel, a third part. And I'm really curious to see where it goes. And it's just really well done. It's one of those sequels where you're like, no. You could watch it onto itself as a single film, and it still works either way.
And the first one, does it end the same, like, does he leave? Like, on a weird note, like... You got to figure it out by yourself?
No. The first one is he leaves. He leaves.
Oh, okay. But
the first one ends, you don't know if they meet up again.
Yeah, again.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're supposed to meet a year later, and you don't know if they met up or not. I guess that's the open-ended part of it.
Oh, okay.
You don't know.
Okay.
But then the sequel, they answer that question, actually.
Yeah.
So check it out. And again, Before Sunset, really good movie.
Nice. Okay, so I've come to realize I like a lot of comedies that took place in 2000s.
Wow.
My number three is Blue Valentine from 2010.
And wait, are you saying that's a comedy?
No, I meant romantic. Sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. Did I say comedy? I meant romantic.
It's like, that was a knee slap.
Did I not
one?
Understand something about that movie? Because I'm pretty sure I felt depressed.
It was so funny, right? Yeah. Oh my God, hilarious. No, yeah, I meant romantic. Romance.
I know.
It's
like,
movies, whatever.
Where
sorry.
Is this going?
I apologize. Sometimes I don't think before I speak.
I was like, I cry a little bit at the end. What's going on? Why are you laughing?
He's like smoking and leaving. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. But yeah, so this is another one where it's the whole meeting each other part and getting to know each other. I mean, it ends kind of on a sad note and it's a little depressing, but. It's a lot depressing. It's super realistic for married couples, I feel like. And I don't know. I love the whole beginning part. The whole scene where he's playing the ukulele and she's tap dancing. That alone is like one of the most romantic scenes I've seen in almost any movie. I love it.
Yeah. And if you're really quiet, you could hear like water running.
It's not raining.
It's not raining.
It sounds like one of those rain things that you turn upside down and everything jingles.
It does. This movie, again, read the synopsis.
Okay.
For people who haven't seen this movie.
Okay. The film centers on a contemporary married couple charting their evolution over a span of years by cross-cutting between the time periods. So it shows them just meeting for the first time and how that goes through and like kind of getting to know each other. But then it like crisscrosses between that and them being married for like 10 years, I want to say probably.
Yeah. And
they're like, they have a kid now. And so it's like all the pressures of having a job and a kid where they kind of, you know, got pregnant before they got married. So it was like one of those situations and really, having to deal with all their problems as a married couple. And I don't know.
And this is another movie where you show people falling in love and then people falling out of love.
Yeah.
Like 500 Days of Summer ish.
Yeah. I have a thing for those apparently. I don't know, but I love in that song, You and Me by Penny and the Quarters.
Yes.
Is fantastic. And that whole scene where he like figures out a song for them for the mix CD was so good. I love it. Very romantic.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually that was in the commentary. They talk about how that was, I guess the director picked most of the music for the movie. And that was one thing he asked Ryan to do. Ryan Gosling. He asked, give her, because actually that scene where he plays the song mm-hmm. was the first scene they shot, and they were both attached to the movie for 5 years prior to the filming of it, but the director asked them not to meet. They waited 5 years because he wanted them to be the right age, like that where they they could play the young version and the older version, and he asked that the first time they met on set, and just in general. Ryan Gosling Michelle Williams mm-hmm. talked about how even like in, you know, in real life when you have an event where there's a bunch of celebrities, they try to avoid each other too, just because of this movie actually.
That's weird.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of that in this movie if you listen to the commentary. And the first scene where they meet is that scene where he gives her the song and he asks Ryan to pick a song to give to Michelle and, you know. That was the song he picked.
He's got great taste in music.
Yeah, totally. And there's a lot of that in this movie. Like, they spent like a month living together in that house to play the older version of themselves. Mm-hmm. So they filmed the first half, and the producers let them have 6 months. So they filmed the first half of the movie. They spent 6 months just like not doing anything, and then they spent a month living in that house with the little girl. The parents of the little girl actually let them. Let the little girl live with Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams for a month.
Yeah, the commentary is really good.
Yeah, it's really good and really informative. And there's a lot of where you're like,
it makes you feel so much more emotional to the character or attached to the characters emotionally when you listen to the commentary. But yeah, I love it. That's my number three.
Yeah,
it's a good pick.
Alrighty. So for my number three, I'm going old time schmaltzy. This one's, I guess, dedicated to my mom. That would be Unaffair to Remember. It's one of the movies that I had to buy her for Mother's Day. I don't know. I watched it once I finally bought it for her, and it's a great movie. I think I've seen the original Love Story that this is a remake of, and then they remade it again as Love Story with Warren Beatty and Annette Bening.
Love Story. Isn't
Love Affair. Love Affair. Love Stories Never Have to Say You're Sorry.
Yes.
Ryan O'Neill
yes.
and yeah. what's her name? Ally McGraw.
Yeah.
Which is not on my list at all.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah, no, Love Affair. I don't think I've ever seen the original Love Affair, but I've seen An Affair to Remember, and it's great. And I understand why Sleepless in Seattle is completely written around women loving An Affair to Remember. It just, that couple, they're the perfect couple. Deborah Carr and Cary Grant. And they meet on that. This is my problem with Love Affair, the newer Love Affair versus An Affair to Remember. There's something much more glamorous about them meeting on an ocean liner and being stuck together for this trip across the Atlantic.
Yes.
Whereas, oh, we met on a plane. Like, well, that's, who cares? I don't care about meeting on a plane.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
And two, it's also like, you're kind of jaded. You're like, You've traveled so much, you know us as living in this time, that you're like, oh, I hate talking to people next to me. Like, I would never talk to anybody. I put on my headphones as soon as I walk in the plane. As soon as I get past security, I put on my headphones and I don't talk to anybody.
Super short answered with people that talk to me.
Yeah, like, hey, could I get through? Sure.
So there's this this awesome nostalgia slash glamour to the fact that their characters meet on this ocean liner and kind of fall in love, but they have to stay away from each other because it's going to start tabloid rumors because he's this playboy. Okay, so the plot is a couple falls in love and agree to meet in 6 months at the Empire State Building, but will it happen?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Will it? Maybe.
I kind of want to find out.
Spoiler alert. What's the movie?
Yeah, it's just a great movie. I fell victim to its charm.
Yeah, and then you said something really important. That is true what you said about, you know, when they remake movies, they don't have as much charm because of that, because of technology, because of, you know.
Well, yeah, it loses something. That's a big part of the whole falling in love is on. I mean, I don't remember. I feel like why would they be on a boat and. Yes. In Love Affair. I can't remember. It's been such a long time. Yeah. Regardless,
but even
you can't beat the original Cary Grant and Deborah Carr, as much as I like Warren Beatty and Annette Bening.
I heard that they were, side note thing, I heard they were remaking Strangers on a Train. And I'm like, that can't work because they'll probably put them in a plane and it's not going to work either because there's something about the train that it would take hours for you to get places. And and it's not going to work because of that. Technology has effed up these remakes.
They should combine it with Snakes on a Plane too.
Ooh. Yeah,
strangers and snakes on a plane.
Strangers with snakes on a plane.
There you go.
Yeah. So that is your number.
That is my number three.
Awesome.
Okay. So my number three is from 2001, and it's Amelie.
Honorable mention. It almost made the list.
Definite honorable mention.
This movie is. I love this movie. I love Amelie specifically. I love what Jean-Pierre Jeunet does and how. The first time you see that person that you fall in love with and he shows her heart beating faster, that's brilliant. I love that it's two of these quirky people that have these interesting hobbies and just they're both dreamers. And that's I love that down to the bone is just two characters that are just dreamers and are romantic and just they're not. Amelie technically isn't searching for love because she just had crappy boyfriends because they're not right for her. But once she does start looking for love, it's how that romantic in her comes out and how she plays all these little kind of games to get the Nino character, the Matthew Kasovitz character, and just drawing like little chalk arrows and having him go follow these little chalk arrows so she can put this book that she found of his and just taking pictures of herself in different costumes and saying, meet me here. That's pure romantic at the heart of it because it's your... If you really want me, you're going to go through these games to get me because it's, you know, it's just going to make you end up falling in more in love with me because you are liking these games. And then just all the little side things where she takes the gnome and gives it to a friend of hers and it travels around the world to get her father out of the house. Mm-hmm. Having people that she works with fall in love and even though in the end it doesn't work out. It's just the sweetness of this movie is, I love it so much.
Something about the French and their games with love. And have you seen Love Me If You Dare? I think it is.
Yeah.
Which is like a much darker take on a similar idea. That's an interesting and fucked up sort of bizarro world version of Amelie.
Yeah.
This
is such a good movie. Have you seen this, Jenny?
No. I've heard so many good things about it, though.
Wait, you've never seen Amelie?
No, I know. Isn't that weird? I know.
You're like... You were like prime age for I remember all the girls were going out to see Amelie.
Yeah, we didn't get it until it was like way later, and then it's one of those that you have to you have to sit down and you know be able to pay attention to. And everyone had already seen it, so anytime that I wanted to watch it, I couldn't. But I will.
Okay, I'm bringing it next week.
Good.
I missed it in theaters, but then years later they re-released it. I didn't watch it. The first run, I watched it. They re-released it at the Egyptian Theater here in LA, and I got to see it with a Q&A
with Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Yeah, and it was really. It's definitely a movie where you enjoy it more when it's on the big screen. I feel it just with the effects and the sound, and it's just such a well-made movie. And she's amazing. What's her name? Audrey
Tautou.
Yeah, she's amazing. I'm surprised she's not in more stuff. You know.
I think she's in a lot of like French indie stuff, but
yeah, but not you know like she kind of had a couple of American movies and then nothing else. We didn't, you know.
I don't think some of the American, like when I think when she came over and started doing English films, that charm of hers, I don't think it necessarily translated as well. It does when she's speaking French.
Yeah. Well, it also doesn't help when they put you in the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, no, that definitely doesn't help.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
Where are we at?
It's two to you. If you can survive, yeah. don't die over there.
I apologize. I have I'm trying not to sneeze. so I pick for number two. I pick 2004's Sideways. Mm. Is that a weird pick or what?
No,
I think that's a weird pick.
Really?
I do.
I think not only this is how I feel about this movie. I think not only is a romance movie, meaning learning to fall in love again and learning to let go of the past, and it's also a romance movie with two friends. You know, like how
a
much
bromance, if
bromance,
you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like that word, but yes.
You don't like bromance?
I don't like that word.
Why?
I don't know why. I don't know. but it's kind of like learning, like, hey, how much? What's enough? How much do you take from your friend? You know, how much of his crap?
Or and, like, what will you do for your friend?
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you guys know this quote. It's from a movie. I don't know where it's from. If any of the listeners know, send it in. But this kind of reminds me of this. There's an old quote from an old movie. I don't know what movie it is, but it's basically someone asks, when is it enough? Like when it comes to relationships, when do you call it quits? When is it enough? And then the other person, I think, doesn't answer. And he says, the right answer is never. It's never. You just keep doing it. You just keep on. If you truly love a person, you keep trying. That's mm-hmm. that's the point of that quote. And I don't remember what movie it's from, but it's kind of like that encapsulates this movie Sideways, where it's like, what are you willing to do for friendship, for love, and you know, the answer is everything. You know, and it's Paul Giamatti, Thomas Hayden Christensen, Virginia Madsen,
Sandra Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't like her.
Hayden Church.
You don't like Sandra Oh?
Christensen.
Well, she's in Grey's Anatomy. Huh?
Hayden Church, not Christensen.
Oh, did I say Christensen?
Yeah, that's a different guy completely. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. He's dying.
Yeah, it's not
Ricardo, not Thomas Hayden.
Yeah, it's not Anakin Skywalker. It's not Anakin Skywalker. It's
Sandman.
Sandman, yes. So it's basically, I'll read you the synopsis, so people who haven't seen the movie. Two men reaching middle age with no much to show but disappointment embark on a week-long road trip through California wine country, just as one of them is about to take the trip down the aisle. So basically, Thomas Hayden Church is about to get married, and this is kind of like his bachelor party. Like his friend Miles, who's played by Paul Giamatti, takes him on a tour of like all the wineries up in Northern California, and they kind of discover things about each other, things about, you know, themselves, and there's a really like cool love story with him, Paul Giamatti and Virginia Madsen, that comes out of it, and I like the ending.
The ending is great.
Yeah, like the ending is like, hey, you know, I just don't want to give it away. Just watch this movie. It's really well done, and there's so many things. It's directed by Alexander Payne, who did the Descendants, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. Yeah.
And it's just, even his scripts are like so well made. Like everything is included in the script. Like what type of like shampoo he uses. Like I've read a couple of his scripts, and they're really, really descriptive. What they're watching on the TV. Like they're just really well made. And I think this is like a really well made movie. And you know, it's like filmmaking 101 on how to, you know, make a movie. Really well done, I think, for my taste. That is it.
I would agree.
Yeah I agree.
Anyway.
We've been to the restaurant.
And yeah, actually, it's a really good restaurant. The Hitching Post.
Called? Hitching Post, yeah. So good.
Up in...
feel like steak.
I think Buellton, California. Yeah. And they have amazingly good steaks.
Santa Barbara? Is that where we usually go? And then we usually go on
the city's Buellton, which is kind of like past Santa Barbara. So I think maybe Santa Barbara County. But anyway, if you're in California, check out the Hitching Post.
Do it.
Delicious.
Okay. My number two is from 2000, and it is the wonderful romantic comedy guy, John Cusack's High Fidelity.
Nice.
That is my number two. This movie came out when I was super, like, I don't know, that age when I came out of it, I was like really into music and making, I don't know. So it was just like when it was perfect for when I was that age.
Well, I'm sure that movie was also the impetus for the podcast we are on right now.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that could be it.
I would say the other podcast as well, since it's a music one.
Yeah. And yeah. But yeah, I love it. John Cusack's just the go-to comedy, romantic comedy guy. And
I do love this movie, but if I were going to have a John Cusack movie on my list of most romantic movies, I think Say Anything would be on it.
That's one of my honorable mentions for sure. Yeah. I love Say Anything.
I'd probably say Say Anything as well, but this is an awesome movie.
Great, yeah. great movie.
I love both. I picked this one out of the two. But yeah, great cast. I'll do the plot summary. Rob, a record store owner and compulsive list maker, recounts his top five breakups, including the one in progress. And so he's breaking up with a girl while this movie's going on, and he's going through like her mail and like little things like that, and like he's doing different lists for his top five breakups, and then he goes back and he meets all his ex-girlfriends again, and they're all like, you know, famous people like Catherine Zeta-Jones and like crazy people like that. And then,
well, they're not playing themselves.
No. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Famous actresses.
Played by famous people. And then, yeah, it's funny and great. I like it a lot.
I think this is a movie where I got the idea for this podcast.
No way.
Yes. You're like, whoa.
Now you just spoiled the illusion. We weren't letting the audience know that you walked away. We said that already. Right.
Yeah. Actually, one of her friends...
Forgot her left the room for a minute, by the way.
Yeah, I had a sneeze. And I didn't want to sneeze on air. Yeah, so I like lists. What do you know?
So when are we going to make a top five lists of your favorite lists?
Yeah.
Oh,
that'll be right. I think that'll be my eulogy.
You guys want Ricardo's top five favorite lists.
Yeah. People he hates. I actually want to do a list of like top 10 people I hate. I just can't really, you know.
Don't air that.
Publish it.
No.
I'll write it and I'll put it
we'll
away.
Do it posthumously.
Yeah. I'll record it and then it'll be released after I die.
Oh.
That'll be good.
Yes.
That'll be really nice for the people that you hate.
Like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. It's really well done. Really good music.
Yeah,
great music.
Jack Black. My favorite scene is Jack Black scene where the guy comes in and he's like, do you guys have a... I just called to say I love you. He's like, what? Do we look like stars?
No. Go to the mall.
Go to the mall.
He's like, oh. He's like, do you even know your daughter?
Shinakoma?
She's like, wait. Shinakoma? He's like, no, she's not. Oh, no, then. She does not like... really well done. And I also like the fantasy scene where... Tim Robbins.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Ian.
I just love how it keeps going further and further. Like, now let's get the air conditioner and slam it into him.
I think it's a fitting movie to have that little Tapeheads reunion. Well, I mean, they've been in stuff together since then, because what Robbins directed, Cradle Will Rock, and Cusack plays Rockefeller in that. But it was, for this movie, it's more poignant for a Tapeheads reunion with this movie about music.
Yeah, totally. It's really, really well done. Really good. One of John Cusack's.
Now that I think about that, does the word poignant really ever apply to Tapeheads? I love Tapeheads, but I don't think of it as a poignant movie. Now that I think about
it. Yeah, I think you're
right. Issuing a retraction. Is what I'm saying.
Retract. All right, where are we at?
Number two. My number two is from 1942, and that is Casablanca.
Ooh, good choice.
Good stuff.
Yes. Again, coming back to the whole like being better for the person.
Yes.
I feel like we're big on the whole sacrifice and making yourself better. That is our general consensus on romance. Yeah.
How much you're willing to give up or give, you know, or fight for something.
Yes. Well, I meant of this list, our lists that we're making today.
No, yeah.
Not necessarily society, because we make a lot of shitty movies that have nothing to do with making...
No, yeah. I meant...
making concessions for the benefit of relationships.
Oh, yeah. This week's podcast.
Okay.
I don't know. I think Battleship, most of the characters are going to make concessions for their relationships in that.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
With this Irish accent. Yes, he's going to play great. Captain.
Every time I see that shot of... the glass breaking and flying in Alexander Skarsgård's face. It makes me laugh. because it looks so ridiculous.
What are those things rolling with the tails? It doesn't.
They're leftover Transformers.
Seriously, that's exactly
roly poly Transformers.
Yeah, with tails.
Anyway, with back tails. To a good movie.
Yes, Casablanca.
Casablanca, which it's all right. So the little IMDb. Set in unoccupied Africa during the early days of World War II, an American expatriate meets a former lover with unforeseen complications. And so, I mean, it's this classic movie. If you haven't seen Casablanca, you should go watch it right now. You should pause this and go watch it.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
Then come back and then start listening
probably
again.
Probably punch yourself in the face first.
So, Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman.
I'm just throwing it out there.
You're so violent. You went to a
I don't condone the violence necessarily, but I mean, Ginny might hurt you. So
it's Valentine's Day. If you're listening to this, the day it airs, it's Valentine's Day. So you know,
yeah,
that's what you should watch.
That's a good romantic movie. Yeah, you should watch that. I vote for that.
I like that. I like that idea too.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a nice black and white movie. You know,
they should play this somewhere for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't.
Yeah,
this would be awesome on the big screen.
Yeah,
go see this or Annie Hall. Annie Hall is such a great like love
movie. Again, that's one where I'm like, I got it. Unless we never do romantic comedies, which
we will.
Then I should have done it on this list, but I was saving it for something else. But it's just so many classic lines. Everybody knows this movie.
Yeah,
Woody Allen made an entire play, which became a movie. That's based around his love for this movie.
Yeah,
which also is an honorable mention for this list because, I mean, we're talking about romance, but I feel like that movie is so much about the love of movies.
Yeah.
And this sort of love that he develops for his best friend. Played Against Sam.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which is a great movie also.
Yeah.
But I mean, this movie, Humphrey Bogart.
He didn't direct that, I think.
Huh?
Played Against Sam? I don't think. That was one of the ones he didn't direct.
He did not direct that, no. I think that was Herbert Ross.
Yeah.
I think
you're right.
And they moved it from New York to San Francisco.
I know. That was like cop out. What's going on?
Whatever works.
Yeah.
But for Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, Paul Henry, Claude Rains. I mean, you know, the long list of all the people, you know, Peter Lorre. It's a great movie. Very quotable. I just feel like I'm kicking a dead horse talking about Casablanca.
It's amazing. There's nothing more to say. Yeah. Humphrey Bogart is the coolest smuggler ever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just put a cigarette in his hand and
he is so badass.
Film that.
My roommate was just watching the other day an episode of Murder, She Wrote, where they had this blatant wannabe Humphrey Bogart.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty weird. They're like, we want to have a Humphrey Bogart feel, but we can't really make Angela Lansbury do that. So let's just bring in some cheap Humphrey Bogart wannabe that's riding along with her. It was interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure anyone can pull off a white suit jacket as well as Humphrey Bogart can.
George Clooney, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah,
it's pretty classy.
I don't know.
Frank Sinatra.
Bogey.
Maybe. All right.
Let's stop.
Let's just move on before Jenny hurts someone.
Yeah. Okay, my number two is from 2002, and it's Punch Drunk Love.
You son of a bitch, dude.
Don't tell me. I mean, I thought it would be on your list, but when I didn't see it, I didn't know it would be this high on your list.
It's my number one, dude.
Wow.
Nice.
Let's talk about it.
I love this movie.
Read the synopsis.
Okay. A beleaguered small business owner gets a harmonium and embarks on a romantic journey with a mysterious woman, which really doesn't, I mean, that's just a very, very small, there's so much going on in this film. But it's really just this schlub who, first of all, doesn't know how to handle talking to a woman or just really talking to anybody. He's neurotic. He's anxious. He's quiet. He's very awkward. But showing how him meeting the right woman who, first of all, just takes him for who he is. She sees, because he doesn't hide anything really well. She sees everything and she just falls in love with him. And just seeing how he becomes stronger and how he wants to fight for her and defend her and harm anybody who hurts her. And how he just becomes a better person. And his neuroses and his anxiety kind of just disappears a little bit because he has this love in his life. and the characters are Adam Sandler, or the actors are Adam Sandler and Emily Watson, who are terrific. And their chemistry on screen is just, it's awesome.
And he shies away from these movies. Adam Sandler does, and I think he you know, once in a while he should do this because,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, really well acted by Adam Sandler, and really, subdued version of, you know, of I feel like he's like a characterization, even in like real life. Like he's kind of a, I think he's a shy guy in real life. Mm-hmm. And the way he gets over is by making jokes and making mm-hmm. voices. But I think this is like drop that, just drop that. And who are you? You're uncomfortable and you're in. Paul Thomas Anderson wrote this movie specifically for Adam Sandler. And it's really well done. It's got such a great supporting cast, too.
Yeah.
And it's just, this is a movie, I think, kind of like, it kind of, what I got out of this movie is that there's someone for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, there's, you know, you may have to search years or, you know, whatever, but there's the right person that you're right for. And it's kind of like, I think, how do I make this as simple as possible? I think the key to this movie, and I think the key to like love, I think. Wow, I'm getting really philosophical here. Sorry, guys.
It's a cold medicine.
Yeah, it's the drugs.
Yeah, it's a cold medicine. Is that, hey, everybody's got some sort of craziness, you know? And is your craziness her brand of craziness? Or, you know, if you're Jenny, is the, a guy's craziness a craziness you can take? That you can, it's your type of craziness, you know? And it's about that. Like, hey, I, and that's the thing. I think everybody's a little crazy.
Yeah.
And it's whether you could, that's your brand or not. And it's really well done. And I think this also kind of encapsulates how I feel about my girlfriend. Like, I'm like, no one would put up with my crap but her. Like, it's just, I hate everything.
It's really true.
It really is true. Like, I think about that all the time. Like, I could never find another person.
You're her type of craziness.
Yeah. I think she just ignores me most of the time. She's like, okay, go on your rant about how much you hate, you know, cancer walks. Yes, I've gone in that.
Yeah,
I'll explain to you later. Don't send me hate mail.
Off mic.
I'll really explain to you later, guys. If you really want to hear my rant about cancer walks, email me and I'll email you why. Pointless. cancer walks. I'm not saying donate to all. See, this is the thing. If she was here, she'd be like, Ricardo, shut up. And then I would shut up. And so
now it's like she is here.
Yeah.
She's embedded in your mind.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how I feel. See, it's kind of encapsulates. That's why it's my number one, is because, you know, no one else would put up with me and my craziness and the type of person I am, how I hate everything and stuff like that, but her. So there you go. Bam. All
right. Yeah, so that was
my number two.
That was Kevin's number two and Ricardo's number
my
one.
My number
yeah.
one. Yeah.
So and again, that just took us right around.
Yeah, took us right around to
nice.
Jenny.
All right. Do you want to do a recap?
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't do a recap. Sorry. My number five is... Oh, crap. Okay. My number five is As Good As It Gets. Number four, True Romance. Number three, Before Sunset. Number two, Sideways. And number one, Punch Drunk Love.
Nice. Okay. My number five was Forgetting Sarah Marshall. My number four was 500 Days of Summer. Three, Blue Valentine. Two, High Fidelity, and my number one, because we've talked about it so much already, Annie Hall. It's my number one romantic. I just did a bunch of romantic comedies, apparently, but yeah.
What are you going to do when we do romantic comedies?
I'm just going to, you know, do regular romantic. It's going to be really great. No.
I think
there
is a large number of
romantic.
Yeah,
I'm
sure good. You're going to be fun.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I love this movie. I know we've already talked about this a few times, but I didn't list it on any of my other list.
It's a definite honorable mention.
It's awesome.
A great movie.
Fantastic. Everything about it. If you haven't seen Annie Hall, this is another one that you should probably stop the podcast and go watch it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
It falls into so many categories, like drama, comedy, romance.
Oscar winner.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. And the thing is, it's funny. Did you watch the documentary? The Woody Allen documentary?
Yes.
How like he... This was very different from the original script,
mm-hmm.
apparently. And that always surprised me. Like, wow, I wonder what movie he was trying to
make. I just remember how originally, even before I saw the Woody Allen documentary, I remember how Manhattan Murder Mystery was originally part of Annie Hall. That story. Yeah, there was the murder mystery was attached to Annie Hall. So apparently it was going to be like an epic 3-hour long romantic comedy / murder mystery.
Wow.
But whatever. We got two awesome movies out of it.
Yeah. And Annie Hall, really well done. No one else could have played those roles but, you know, Diane Keaton and Woody Allen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Okay. My turn?
Yeah.
All right. So, my wrap-up. My number five was The Apartment. My number four was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Number three, Unafraid to Remember. Number two, Casablanca. And number one, Brief Encounter. Unless You're My Girlfriend, in which case my list was number 5, The Notebook, number 4, The Notebook, number 3, The Notebook, number 2, The Notebook, and number 1, Crazy Stupid Love. Oh, wow. I was told if I didn't have The Notebook on my list, she was going to break up with me. Oh, so wow. Next week, I might not have a girlfriend.
Well, just I mean,
and honestly, I don't have a problem with The Notebook. I've only seen it one time. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, it's really good. It's I remember. A good movie for what
it's
it is.
Very romantic. He reads to her after she loses her mind.
Yeah.
Will Jenny do that for you?
Ricardo? Jenny. Michelle.
Sorry, Michelle, do that for you. Yeah.
One of the coils.
One of the coils.
I will not do that for you. No, I'm sorry.
No. Will Michelle make Jenny do that for you?
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, the new listeners, Jenny is my girlfriend's sister.
And, the better coil. No, I'm just kidding.
They look alike. They're just a couple
I don't
years
know.
Apart.
I prefer Lacuna coil. Anyway, yeah, I have nothing against The Notebook, and I hope my girlfriend doesn't break up with me because it's not on my list.
But I think that's kind of like, it's kind of this really shows of what kind of romantic you are. Like, I feel like, you know, if, watching my list and going down it, I think I'm kind of like a sad romantic, I think. Maybe a little bit. Maybe not. Maybe.
Punch Drunk Love has a happy ending.
It does. So it just kind of shows you what kind of. I think Jenny's a cheerful romantic. You know, she picked
comedy.
Like funny like stuff. Yeah. So.
And she's a real romantic. She likes the real.
She likes it real and gritty and funny.
Yeah. Blue Valentine just threw me for. Wow. I can't believe you picked that.
I'm sorry.
That's like got really deep all of a sudden. Honorable mentions. Oh my god, yeah. I'm sorry, Kevin. I thought
Jeez, I know we already talked about my number one, but
did we?
Yeah.
What was it?
Okay, so my number 5 was Brief Encounter. 4 was Lovers of the Arctic Circle, 3 was Amelie, 2 was Punch Drunk Love, and number 1 was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless
Mind. That's right. Nice. Okay. That's what I was like. Nice. I know we've all gone. We've stepped over each other's foot on this list. what is it to say? Today's Valentine's Day, if you downloaded the episode when it came out. So happy Valentine's Day. I'll do honorable mentions then finish my little spiel. Honorable mentions is Here we go. The Cooler, from 2003.
Doesn't really come to the tip, like off the top of the head. I don't think of that when I think of romantic. I think William H. Macy and Maria Bello fucking really hard.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you the rundown of The Cooler. The Cooler is William H. Macy. He works at a casino. He's a cooler. He's got horrible luck. So whenever somebody's on a hot streak, they send in William H. Macy. And the people start losing. So whoever he kind of touches, he's got a bad luck mojo. And then he meets, I guess, his love, Maria Bello. And then his luck changes, maybe. number 12, Away From Her, the 2006 Julie Christie.
That's Sarah Polley.
Yeah. Number 11, Rushmore. And number 7... What am I doing? Countdowns.
I don't know which.
It was a weird number, like 12 to like, what's the 7?
It's the drugs.
I had a bunch.
Just tell us what your last one is. It'll be okay. Then you can go to bed.
Lars and the Real Girl.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet, but I really want to.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling is amazing in that.
Yeah.
I think I have a thing for Ryan Gosling. He's my bromance.
There's nothing wrong with that.
He's your bromance, even though you don't like that word. Yeah. You like him enough to use the word you hate.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've overcome.
Wow.
You've become a better man.
I've become Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling is your type of crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He makes me want to be a better man.
Okay. Ones that I've already included in other lists, Love Actually and The Princess Bride are two of my favorite romantic movies. Also, Notting Hill. I'm a huge Hugh Grant fan. And that one's just really funny. I included Shaun of the Dead. Because that is
I was thinking of putting that
romantic.
On my list.
Yes.
All about him trying to save the girl.
And romantic.
Yeah.
It's romantic and romantic.
It is.
All
it is.
In one. It's very. And then
it's just like a love story all around. Yeah. Love for his mom. Love coming to terms with his dad, with his stepdad.
It's about growing up.
Yeah. You're right.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it is.
And then Say Anything as my other John Cusack love.
I think that was the only other... Say Anything was the only other movie that hadn't been mentioned that was an honorable mention, except for, like, I had all these Katharine Hepburn movies I wanted to put on, like Philadelphia Story and Bringing Up Baby, but I have a feeling those might pop up on other lists.
I think so. And by the way, Say Anything, great ending. How it just ends on the bing of the plane. I just love that ending for some reason. Anyway.
Yeah.
Kevin, your honorable mention?
Let's see. Honorable mentions I had once. Roman Holiday.
Mm.
And... really good Bogey Bacall film to have and have not. The chemistry between those two, awesome. Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
Yeah. With the Disney one or the French one?
I actually haven't seen the French one, so I'm going with the Disney one.
The TV series with Linda Hamilton?
And yes. Ron Perlman? Ron
Perlman? And Ron Perlman. And that's what I'm going with, is the TV series.
That was that was a Jeopardy question like 2 days ago, and I was so happy I knew that. I was like...
You're watching Jeopardy?
Yes, I was watching Jeopardy.
And
I think the real question is, you watched Beauty and the Beast with Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman?
Yes.
Who didn't?
I didn't.
I didn't.
I was a little bit too young for that.
I had a single mom. And a guilty pleasure of mine, You've Got Mail.
Okay. Yeah, I can admit I totally... I bought that for my mom, and I think I watched it more than she did.
Yeah.
And then they made a joke about... Undeclared. Senator Rogen talks about how it's my favorite movie.
He's all, I tell everybody it's Red Dawn.
but it's really You've Got Mail.
I love that.
So this is Valentine's Day, if you're downloading the day of. So I want to give a special thanks to my girlfriend, because we do the podcast out of our apartment, and she puts up with that for 2 hours every week. So thank you for being sequestered into the other room.
Oh, she's here?
No, she's not. But today I sent her out. I'm like,
you let her out today?
Get out. But no, that's it. And thanks for everybody for listening, for downloading. What else? We're going to have some cool episodes coming up. We're going to have some guests.
We're only having one guest?
No, yeah. Many guests.
Guests.
Yeah. Guests. On the show.
Christopher Guest.
Maybe.
Ooh.
Maybe.
How about Nick? Oh, let's start with Nicholas Guest, and we'll see if we can build up from there.
So we're going to have some cool people on the show. Hopefully some writers, some actors, some people in the biz, telling us their favorite lists. Listing some of their favorite movies. Yeah.
No, I want to know what their favorite lists are.
Yeah. What are the... No. You got me thinking.
I want them to come
now.
Onto the list and tell us which of our lists were their favorite.
Yeah. And what else we got? So follow the podcast on Twitter, because we're going to start having some trivia stuff. And if you answer correctly, you'll get some cool stuff, I think. Some cool or some really dorky stuff. It depends.
It can be cool and dorky.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool dorky stuff out there.
Depends if you like a
dorky Zen right now,
like a movie poster with
Dorky is the New Black,
Taylor Lautner on them. Anyway, I think I'm going to give away some Comic Con stuff I got this
from last year.
But anyway, so follow us on Twitter. We're at the Film Podcast on Twitter, and on Facebook we're just type in facebook.com/ the List Film Podcast, and you could follow us on both those, and you will be able to participate in the trivia questions. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
And our website.
Oh yeah, the website is want to hear what some of your favorite romance movies are. So, the post will be up on Valentine's Day, and then you could comment on the post and tell us some of your picks. www.thelistfilmpodcast.com.
And I am at Jhenigh. That's JHNEIGH.
I'm at @UnAdamScott, @AN_ Adam Scott with 2 T's.
And I'm at KZuberBeer. That's ZUBERBIER.
Oh, yeah. Follow Kevin. Real quick thing. Sometimes he posts some like deep fucking shit where I'm like, man, Kevin, what?
Deep thoughts with Kevin Zuber.
Yeah,
I'm trying something. I'm actually I'm thinking about starting to try to post some poetry, just like a little bit.
I know. I would dig it.
You gotta show us up. I just like put up dick jokes sometimes.
I've been reading poetry recently, and I thought, hey, Twitter might be an interesting way to try it out.
Some haiku.
Yeah,
you can fit a haiku in 140 characters, can't you?
Yeah.
Well, you could just tweet them as you go.
And then also, I might have a new Valentine's Day post up by the time this is up. But I do have, I really like my Valentine's post from last year on shooting a script. Love is a Dog from Hell, 14 Tales from the Dark Side of Love, shootingascript.wordpress.com.
Yeah. If you want to hear some good reviews on stuff, we don't do that in this podcast, but you follow Adam and on his website. He's got a couple of different people reviewing different movies. It's shootingascript.wordpress.com. shootingthescripts.wordpress.com.
Shootingthescripts.wordpress.com.
Damn, you gotta get rid of the WordPress, dude.
We're gonna get rid of WordPress.
It's really tripping me up, man.
By the end of February, hopefully, it'll just be shootingthescript.com. But right now, shootingthescript.wordpress.com. And then on the search, you should search Valentine's Day movies.
Yeah, yeah. And that's Adam Scott's blog. I guess, is it a blog?
It is a blog.
It is a blog. Yeah, it is a blog. So check him out there. And what else? Check our other podcast out, Jenny and I's podcast, called The List Music Podcast. It's on iTunes. Go to the website. thelistmusicpodcast.com.
I think it's about time for another dosage of medicine, Ricardo.
I know. I'm running out of steam, and I got another podcast to go. And they usually run like 2 hours. Yeah. All right, so till next week, have a good week.